one of my men that worked with me later, Bill Armstrong, who was set to fly with him that day that he crashed. But Ed, when he died at his summit, at his funeral, his wife had this guy that sings at ball games sing, "I'll Do It My Way." And Henry Ford, all of us, the tears just came down, because that's the way he was. He shouldn't have been flying a twin-engine plane alone, but that's the way he ran things.
Yeah.
By God, and while I loved him and worked with him, if I wanted to sell this and didn't come with him on something, he wouldn't back me on this one. You had to play ball with him.
Why did he think the Corvair would go?
If it was here today, it'd be right. Better than ever. It was economical, but what killed it, those were the days of dragster cars where you'd take not just Corvettes, but you'd put big engines in the A-bodies. All those Pontiacs and Olds, they'd rip the stones out of the street. Corvair couldn't do that. I built one for my daughter, and she's afraid to drive it, because you go to shoot across the street and it wouldn't go. And the blowers even they put on acted like a slip and clutch. I built a couple of cuties, the Monza, took them to Florida, and six carburetors. I had a lot of fun. But the car wasn't timed right. Today they're good looking. I got one for George Russell. He's got it down in Palm Beach. He just told me the other night he's all restored. Good styling is classic. It's lasts forever.
Did you and did Ed come to you and say, "Bill, I've got an idea. I want you to." Yeah. How did that work out?
Earl was still there. We went in a separate room. Nobody knew anything about it. And we worked just with Cole. And Ned Nichols was a designer. And we worked with him. Nobody in General Motors knew it. Earl liked Cole. And he liked Knudsen. And the funny thing, he liked DeLorean.
Really?
Well, DeLorean was a good guy.
Goodness, no days. He was fabulous by here.
No, Cole, he was a great dreamer. This last thing he had that would carry freight, this big, God, he'd get onto something like that and he'd just go. And the thing is, he'd be 95 years old before it ever was born. But he was a great pusher.
The rear engine was quite a sensation in those days.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, he saw the advantages of the Porsche and the Volkswagen, see? And actually, the one thing that defeated, is that too much sun?
No, that's okay.
That one thing that defeated it was the wagon. So you had a high floor.
Yeah.
And the best station wagon is a front wheel drive. Well, you know, an interesting thing, under my direction, which Earl didn't have much to do before, but after Europe it got to be a big thing, they came to me and said, "Can you put a good designer in Opel?" And they named one, and I said, "Well, he isn't good. You've got to take the best man we got. Opel is second to Chevrolet." So I brought in Rubicki and let the overseas people talk to him. And I brought in Jordan, and I brought in McKeegan. And they didn't know what they're interviewing. They just thought they were talking to him. The designers did. But they selected Rubicki because of his age. He was in between. Jordan was too young, and they thought Mac was too old, that he had kids in college. He didn't want to go over there. Well, Rubicki didn't want it. He turned it down. And so they chose Mac, and he wanted it. He liked it. And he was over there 5 years and did a hell of a job. And
what was his full name again?
Claire McKeegan.
Claire McKeegan.
He's retired in Florida now. And how do we get into that Opel?
The Corvair and the Opel.
No. The rear engine. Oh, I was studying with Vauxhall and Opel, future cars, and we knew we were going to make a small car here. So we made all layouts. Conventional, front-wheel drive, rear engine. Front-wheel drive proved the best because a little engine could be turned crossways, which they're doing now. And you had all that floor down here. In fact, the Tornado, Charlie Chain and Earl wanted to build a front-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
And Earl saw it as a sports car. But Chain was chief engineer, and he saw it as a wagon. And the first one was ever built was an Olds wagon. Nobody ever saw it.
Yeah.
I mean, and to run around.
Uh-huh.
Then the Riviera was already out.
Mm-hmm.
So they took the Riviera chassis, and I remember going to the proving ground, and you could always see a tornado because the hood was that much longer. Wow, that looked spooky.
Uh-huh.
But we studied every way, and the front wheel drive was the best. You knew it was coming. The rear engine is just not the way for people and packages, luggage. You see, the big thing, you can't put the luggage up front because wheels turn, and your package space isn't big.
Right.
And funny, Indianapolis, they got rid of front wheel drive after a few years. They said it wasn't the best. On sports cars, I've got a model downstairs of the, I'll have to show you my studio,
mm-hmm.
of the Corvette, the way it was going before I left, was mid-engine.
Mm-hmm.
And they just couldn't spend the money. But that's the way to do a sports car, because it handles.
Mm-hmm.
Indianapolis, anything, Formula One, they're all mid-engine.
Mm-hmm. Out of the Corvair came something which people, some commentators describe as one of your finest creations, the Monza.
Yeah, yeah. That's beautiful.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, I wanted to get something that would go up against the Mustang,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted it to be more exotic. So I built the one where the hatch came up and the show car. And it's still a beautiful car, but it was heavy. So then I built the open job, and they just couldn't see putting that out, that's all. But it went around to shows everywhere.
Yeah. Does it still exist?
Yeah. One nice thing they've done for me at the tech center, I've got a museum over there in the warehouse.
Uh-huh.
My Manta Rays and all that. Up at Flint is the two Rivieras I did. I put that much on the hood and lowered the roof 4 inches.
Museum.
Yeah, the Silver Arrow 1 and 2.
I was going to ask you about the Silver Arrow, but before we get to Silver Arrow, tell me a little bit more about how the Monza...
Well, they just couldn't get born. For Cole was for it, everybody's for it.
Uh-huh.
It's a sports car.
Right, yeah.
But it's funny, the corporation, now they're seeing more of this, but there was a time when Roach wanted to wash out the Corvette.
Mm-hmm.
Financially, it wasn't, they...
Yeah.
Now, I said to my wife, she said, don't talk like that, but I said, Kroger's makes more money than Tiffany's.
You're right.
That's why GM's into all these funny-looking things.
Yeah.
They're not out for prestige. They don't give a goddamn about that.
Mm-hmm.
Money.
Right.
Money.
Yeah.
And they would go from, and look at these conglomerates, that one that's on called Beatrice or something.
Mm-hmm.
They make snow shovels, gin, breakfast food, dog collars.
And peanut butter.
Oh, God. That makes me sick. That just turns my stomach. And that's what Smith's doing.
But you couldn't get the Monza off the off the drawing board, or off the prototype?
No,
prototype.
We just made two prototypes.
Yeah, that marvelous.
I loved it, too.
It was gorgeous. I saw a picture up the other day, and I was really impressed.
They're at the tech center.
Good. What about the, was that the SS? What about the SS? The one you had out at Elkhart Lake, I remember.
Well, I made a lot of those. Well, first I made the cheapest way you could make one was chop the production job.
Mm-hmm.
So I chopped it, put headrests on it,
mm-hmm.
brought the pipes out of the side. And I was always making those. God, I had them coming out of my ears.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they haven't made a show car since I left.
Haven't they really?
That makes me just nauseates me. They made aerodynamic studies.
Uh-huh.
But aerodynamics and I don't get along. Hell, they're running Daytona down there 200 miles an hour without that kind of aerodynamics.
Was the Super Spider, was that the...
That was one.
Was the another, that's a gorgeous.
Yeah.
Is that still available?
That's out there. I think so, yeah.
That's marvelous.
I didn't have anybody to report to. I just go make them see.
That's great.
One time Roach did say, before you do a show car, write what it ought to be. Sit over here a little bit.
Thank you.
And I said I couldn't do that because I could never finish. I could, like writing a story, you change it all the time.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I said... I did one. I did a two-passenger Tornado.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that was something.
Yeah.
Put that in the show. But I learned from Earl to do these. You see, You have no committees. That's how I sold a lot of stuff. As you came in to get on the elevator to go in my office, I only drove those kind of cars.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd look at it and say, geez, I'd have them bidding on it.
Mm-hmm.
Let us make it. See?
The 50s were good years for General Motors. You made a lot of money. You
yeah.
all sold Ford,
yeah.
Except for maybe for 1 year. And Chevrolet was riding high. Did you still have that crew together that I read about, Claire McKitchen?
Yeah, he was.
What about
Rebecca? Claire? Was Olds.
Mm-hmm.
And McKeegan was Chevrolet.
And Howells, Dave Howells?
Dave Holes was Cadillac.
Uh-huh.
And,
that was a pretty good team, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're here. They're, well, Max retired, but Dave Holes has now got sort of the, there's Rebicki,
uh-huh.
and then Jordan, and then I'd say Holes.
Uh-huh.
And then on the West Coast, they've started a studio, you know, a design thing,
mm-hmm.
by Haga. And Haga had run Opel for years.
Mm-hmm.
My plan was to have them go, I'd put them in Australia, then I'd put them in England,
uh-huh.
and Germany. The only thing is, there's one designer that I loved, Wayne Cherry, big, tall, handsome guy. He loved England,
uh-huh.
and he did not want to move. I was getting ready before I retired to get him to Australia,
mm-hmm.
because when they came back, they were stronger. See?
Sure.
And
Ford copied that technique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, God damn it, he married a nice English girl. My wife and I had dinner with him,
mm-hmm.
and just when we were having dinner, we got word that he was transferred to Opel. And as much as he loved England, well, Opel's the big thing.
Sure, oh yeah.
Vauxhall has just gone
yeah.
down like
yeah.
that. But our chief designer at Opel was up by the Lorelei, you know, where that towers in the Rhine, where they used
mm-hmm.
to pay toll to go by.
Right. Yeah.
And he was out off a cliff to take some pictures. And he dropped part of his camera, and he went over the safety line to get it and fell, and killed.
Oh, yeah.
And so they took Wayne and moved him to Opel.
Now, who was that who died again?
His name was, I gotta think. I had it, I'll have to think.
Mention Jordan?
No, this guy was head of Opel.
Oh, I see, head of Opel.
Head of Opel.
Is McKeegan still still?
No, he's in Florida. Yeah, he's retired. He's down
in Florida.
Florida,
yeah.
Yeah.
And
Rebicki? Rebicki has had my job.
He's there now.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
good.
Why you don't hear about him. See?
Yeah. Right. You're the one. He's kept the low profile
yeah.
since you met. And Dave Holes is retired. And
Dave Holes is right behind.
He's right
no,
behind.
Jordan is. Jordan is the head stylist
uh-huh.
under Rebicki.
What's his first name?
Chuck. Charles Jordan.
Okay. And Dave Holes.
Dave Holes is under him.
Under him. Oh, good. Yeah. So you've had a good decade. The immediate post-war decade has been good for GM. They're selling well, and the
yeah.
cars are very well accepted. And now it's 58, and Mr. Earl decides to retire. Was there any reason for it?
Oh, 65. That's the GM law.
Oh, okay.
65.
That
he
yeah.
died when he was 75.
He lived another
My
10
wife
years.
And I had just had dinner with him too. Next day,
had,
had a stroke. Yeah. Palm Beach. Great guy. Like a father to me.
Uh-huh.
I was 23 and I started with him. I was 46 when he turned it over to me. So that was half of my life.
He never changed. He was always the same.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful personality.
Uh-huh.
Powerful. He wouldn't yes anybody.
The era of Alfred Sloan had passed just about this time, had it not?
Well, yeah. His
58.
You see, Sloan was such a dictator, and he ran it, always did.
Didn't delegate much, except Earl.
Well, no, he was delegated around, but he built the structure for the whole thing.
Right.
A car for each and every person purpose. Chevrolet, Pontiac, Olds. And then along came Knudsen, and he was a fix-it guy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He didn't have it. Wilson, I can't remember what he looked like.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have it.
Yes, right.
And Curtis was flamboyant.
Yes.
But he was his own worst enemy because he never wanted to come to Detroit. He had a Lockheed Vega that they'd fly back and forth to Flint. And he was so pro-Buick
yeah.
that he tried to make a million Buicks before Chevrolet did. And probably made the worst 55s, the worst Buicks ever made. They made so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
He was president then, too.
That's right, yeah.
But He reminded me of my father, his Scotch, you know, reddish complexion.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved him. I personally thought the world of him.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when he shot Anderson, that accident at the club,
yeah,
he died right after. That just took everything out of
him. Shattered him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So, who has succeeded Curtis then at this time?
I've got it all. I've got a book. What I did, I went to and had a room downstairs in one of the studios, mm-hmm, and put an engineer on this. It took about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll show you, I've got everybody from Sloan, the directors, the president, the chief engineers, the general manager, from when I took over to when I retired.
That'd be great. Yeah.
And I've got every car.
Good.
Because I knew I couldn't, if I ever wrote a book, I couldn't go back and ask somebody to dig it out, so I got it.
Good, good, good.
So you forget, you know, what year.
You've taken over for Mr. Earl, and you've been working for him, by then, about 12 years?
No, 23 years.
23 years by 15?
I came when I was 23, and I was 46.
That's right, you said that.
Yeah.
What sort of a situation did you find at General Motors in terms of it?
Well, I had my plan of what I was going to do. One thing I did, instead of having a studio of 10 people in one studio, I'd have 5 studios of 2 people. I mean, get more ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't believe in a lot of people in a room,
mm-hmm,
because the imposters could get away with murder. You never knew who did what.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's just a couple of guys, all these special cars I did, just cut one or two designers.
Uh-huh, that's good.
Sometimes only one.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't have a melting pot into a car.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick pieces, put them together. But you can't paint a watercolor Grand Central Station, you know. You can't have all that. And I think there's a lot of that today.
Did you find that it was different? Was the committee approach taking over about this time?
Oh, when Earl left, they thought they had me because they couldn't run him.
Yeah.
So the first couple of years, I had to watch it. They were moving in on me.
Uh-huh.
And I fought like hell, and I made it.
Uh-huh.
I used to think I'll never make it, but I did.
Uh-huh.
And I had his picture back of me in my office. I thought, I'll never let you down. Well, it was Murphy or who it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the guys that love cars, like Knudsen and Cole, to back me up.
Good.
And
right.
I'd go right now. Even in John's book, he tried to make the...
John Gordon?
John DeLorean.
Oh, of course.
In his book, one of them, he said that he tried to get the Camaro and Firebird out of the A-body. And I got Cole, and we knocked him down, Estes. And he said, Mitchell fixed me.
He admitted it.
I never got on. I didn't like him.
Yeah.
I didn't like his aloof egotism.
Yeah,
he'd
right.
sit in a meeting and open his briefcase and brush his hair. And he'd dress floozy, you know. He called us the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
He was a queer guy.
Yeah.
But you know where he changed? I'll never forget this. In my dining room, he'd come up. They'd all come up and eat different times.
Mm-hmm.
I inherited that from Earl. Beautiful dining room.
Uh-huh.
A push button, Lazy Susan.
Okay.
Control of music and everything. And... he'd been gone a week or two, and he'd go away, being a vice president. Nobody knew where the hell he was. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else would dare do that. But he just liked to flaunt this. And he was sitting to my left, and I was looking into the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't see him too well, but he was talking, and he always ate fast and left. And I got up, I called Knudsen on the phone. I said, Bunky, have you seen John? I said, he doesn't look the same. I just like... I don't know. He's like a guy that changed.
Mm-hmm.
Dorian Gray story, you know?
Yes, right. All of a sudden he was gray.
What the hell is it? So, went the other way. He had his teeth pulled out and all screwed in, had his face lifted, and then he said that he'd been in a wreck. Well, hell, he didn't need it. And when his face changed, he changed. And he had an outfit in California. We're making their commercial movies for Pontiac. And that's when he met... Kelly
Harmon.
Harmon.
Yeah.
And the guys I knew out there that got him into wearing socks without the shoes, no socks, uh-huh, turtleneck sweaters.
Yeah.
He just changed.
Uh-huh. Completely gone.
He just went the other way.
Uh-huh. The people like Ed Cole and Pete Estes and Monkey Knutson, you made friends with and made them your professional.
They're real car guys. Yeah,
right. Yeah, really car guys, and that got you over maybe the rough spots of Earl leaving and the.
Well, yeah, I had, they'd back me up against Kies and some of those other guys.
Yeah. What about Kies' boss? We mentioned it briefly earlier. The
Wilson.
Yeah, who went within the Eisenhower administration.
He was nothing. I can't
really
remember.
Where had he come from? He'd come up through the ranks somewhere.
He came from, was ahead of my time, so I don't remember.
He must have come up from engineering. Apparently.
He came from Delco, I think. He's one of those guys. And I never knew a general manager that came from one of these outlying divisions was worth a damn.
Really?
That's what's scaring me today. There's no heritage of moving up.
Yeah. Curtis was flamboyant, but he was a good he was a good carman.
Well, he loved he knew sales and he knew.
Yeah.
He came to Earl and he said when he was head of Buick and he was really a bookkeeper, financial man.
Right.
And he said, I don't know a damn thing about style. And Earl made him. I remember I put the Cadillac studio was right across the hall from Buick in the Research B.
Uh-huh, right.
And you could open up the doors and move cars in and out. And we had that through fender on the Cadillac, and Cadillac didn't want it. Earl gave it to Buick.
And that did it.
And after the war, the convertibles were hot. Buick convertible became synonymous.
Mm-hmm.
That through fender.
Mm-hmm.
And the gun sight he took. And quite a few things we had that he took. The instrument panel, engine turning, and things like that.
And then the Riviera, and that really made it.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't Curtis, so that
no,
was...
No, but I mean you. Gordon and Donner were pretty much bean counters, weren't they?
Well, Gordon...
Is that word,
yeah. Yeah, he was, let's say, conservative.
Yeah.
The rumor is that, you see, when Cole was president, or before that, when Curtis was president, and the chairman was, he came after Sloan, New York. Oh, God damn it. He stayed in New York. See, Sloan never would come out. He was a New Yorker. And Bradley never.
Oh, Albert Bradley.
Albert,
yes.
Bradley.
Right, yes.
But Cole ran everything, and
mm-hmm.
they didn't want this to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
So when they got Donner, they picked Gordon, and he could run Gordon.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
And I remember the phone would ring, and Gordon was, oh, God damn, is he calling me again? He'd just run it from New York, but Gordon couldn't get away with anything.
Right.
So then when Cole came on as president, or chief engineer under Gordon, he had a time, but when he became president, Gerstenberg couldn't run him. But Gordon, they liked each other.
Yeah.
When they retired, they both said it's a shame. They were only together a couple years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Cole was running it.
Yeah.
But the plan is never again to have, now, the minute Murphy got in, you never got any publicity out of PBS. Now you don't hear much about McDonald.
Yeah.
Smith's,
yeah.
Everything's Smith.
Uh-huh.
He's running the show.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And McDonald, you don't know where he is. He's a fix-it guy. But it's going back to the Sloan control.
The one-man control.
I remember one time I said to Donner, we're flying in a plane, and I said, the difference between Ford and General Motors is Ford is decentralized. General Motors is decentralized, and Ford's centralized. And he said, decentralized with centralized control.
Uh-huh.
And then every time I'd exalt the fact that what made Earl run it was a big man, well, Donner wasn't a big man. He'd always talk about Ernie Breech, because
uh-huh.
Ernie was small.
Yes, right, yeah.
I got along good with Donner. Oh, yeah.
Fred Donner, yeah.
I'd go over Gordon if he wouldn't do something.
Mm-hmm. I think Donner was probably a very fair person.
Oh,
you,
yeah.
That you could present a good case.
And I went to Europe a lot with him.
Did you?
We'd swap ties and have some drinks, dinners. He just wine, but he liked that.
Yeah.
God, they tell me all that's gone now. All those nice
really?
Things overseas.
No, they cut them all out.
One guy I wanted that Ford got was Lutz.
Bob Lutz?
Bob Lutz was head of PR in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went with Opel as sales manager. And then he couldn't get going like he wanted to because he was under Earl Dom and some of those old guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he went with BMW.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd get me motorcycles from BMW.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They got a new one out now I've got to get a hold of. I knew, I gave a talk. Well, the chairman, I had lunch with him and was telling him about my philosophy. And he was writing it down the tablecloth. I said, I'll send you a film, sound film. And I sent one of my men over. And he invited all the Germans in. They sent it to London. I did it. But I did a film on the government trying to take over industry.
Hmm. Yeah. The did you find in 58 when you took over, did you find, you mentioned that the committee mentality began to impinge on your area. Were you able to hold them off?
Oh, it took a little while, but I did.
How'd you do that?
I surrounded myself with people that wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
Cole and Newts and the new breed.
Right.
And, oh, they were ready to, because I had a seating committee. They were all big, tall guys, tall uppers, short,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they held a package. And they went through in 61. God, we had to raise the coupes, and they're awful. The next year, we kicked them out. But
mm-hmm.
there was a time where I had a hell of a battle.
Because
Earl, while he's 6'4", he was all legs. He could sit in a car and say, look at the room in here. And there's some stories of... If he had an accident, you know, and some guy jump out of a car to come over, by the time he got out of the car, the guy run, jump back in his car, and he'd get out and hit a car, low car, you know, and then he'd get up like that. Jesus Christ.
That is intimidating, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ernie reaches a defection, if you can call it that, bringing a lot of GM people with him. Did that cause any dislocation?
Ernie was always liked by everybody,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and he did a lot for TWA, you know, and that
right.
other stuff. He was a great man, and he got sort of sidetracked by GM.
He was at Bendix, and he didn't think he was going anywhere. Yeah. So he brought over Earl McPherson, as I recall.
Yeah.
And Del Harder.
Yeah.
And of course the design.
He brought all the books. The whatchamacallit? They brought the books right out of Fisher Body.
Really?
It was with Fisher. What was his name? Got a big home over here. Oh, I forget. He was one of the top men he brought, and he took the books and everything.
Really?
How to run it, yeah.
It became sort of a miniature GM in a way. Yeah.
And then where we had a reverse is when Knudsen went with Ford.
Yeah.
And then Iacocca belonged to the club over here.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to be. Remember, I was down in Hawaii, and my daughters came over to see me, and I was staying in a place at the hotel on the ocean there. He was next door, Iacocca, and he swore this was my girlfriend, and I said, it's my daughter. And I'll forget, he'd go out in the ocean, he'd have his cigar, and he wouldn't realize it until he got out there, and he couldn't swim. But he kicked Knudsen out.
Yes, right.
No doubt about that.
Knudsen had a very good, pretty good track record at Chevrolet and Pontiac, as I recall.
Yeah.
And,
with your
help.
Story was, I remember one day Roach, who was president, says, well, what made Knudsen leave?
Uh-huh.
I said, Jim, don't you know he and Cole just couldn't be both. And when Cole got it, see, he lived in the story his father was president once, he's going to be president.
Sure.
And Cole didn't like him, and I said to the guy that was over me, not McCune, anyway, I said, who's going to get the job? He said, well, Bunky's lazy. And that's it. Bunky was a slow talking. He lived in the past a lot. Now my dad did this.
Yeah.
He was born with a silver spoon, you see.
Mm-hmm, right.
And Cole wasn't. Cole came up the hard way.
Yeah, yeah. Right. He was a good mechanic.
So Bunky left.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when it happened, I knew something was going on because at the engineering policy meeting, he was half loaded. And he threw a book over to me, read the book, and interrupted the thing and acted funny, and he had left then.
Oh, he'd left then.
He'd seen Ford.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in the middle when he was there because Cole and he were my buddies.
Yeah.
And I'd always have to watch. Yeah. He'd talk about Cole and Cole talk about him.
Mm-hmm. I think the board made a wise choice. I think Cole was far the superior person.
Yeah.
Couldn't Knudsen had stayed around?
He could have stayed. He could have had it. Yeah.
He could have had it eventually.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He was impatient. Or he was ticked off because he was passed over.
Yeah.
Did either Cole or Knudsen have any impact on design?
Oh, both of them. Knudsen loved cars.
He did. Yeah.
Now I've often said this, with all the executives, and I always felt guilty. Come Friday, I'd have four or five special cars to take home.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Goad was the guy I was thinking of. One time, Goad called me in his office.
Now, who was he again?
He was over the tech center. He's the guy that they thought should have been brought after Curtis.
Yeah, G-O-A-D.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's home down here. Yeah. And he said, you know, I got some people telling me that you'll take five and six special cars around your house on the weekend. I said, you're damn right. You don't see me playing golf. God damn, I bet I know more about cars than you or anybody else. And he shut up. He never said another word. But getting back to that, I could have a lot of these special cars, and I'd be ashamed. I'd say to people walking out, I'd say to Cole, do you want to use this weekend? No, I'm going fishing. Nobody, well, no. Curtis, you could fix a car up for. We had the Italian Farina built a couple for him.
Mm-hmm.
We designed them and he built them.
Right.
But Knudsen would. He had special pickups, special colors, everything. He loved cars.
Yeah.
But there weren't many executives that liked the car as a car.
Uh-huh.
You'd have trouble fixing one up for him.
Yeah. Ford had the Ghia connection and you had the Pininfarina.
Yeah, before Ford, Chrysler had,
oh, that's
Exner
right.
had Ghia.
Exner.
And Ford had, what's his name? The Ford built those cars for Le Mans, those Formula cars, racers. Ford finally bought him out, and he went and he bought Moto Guzzi and some other motorcycle companies. What the hell was his name? He got his money from a wealthy American. He was an Argentinian, really. He built the Fords that went to Le Mans.
Was it Dimas?
Dimas.
But you had a Pininfarina connection there for a time.
Oh, yes. Well, he had built all. I loved them.
Some of those marvelous things I've seen, yeah.
Well, he didn't design them. We'd design them and he'd build them.
He'd build them, okay.
And what's upset me since is that through Murphy, he's building a new two-seater Cadillac.
Oh, is he? I've heard about that.
And to me, I purposely had Smith. He met me out at the tech center. We had a meeting before I went to Florida last year. Irv told me he'd been to Europe, and I said, why'd you come back so soon? And he said he went over to look at this car. It's all done, and he said he made one too. But his was only in clay. The other one was finished. It was Smith that did it. He wanted that imported champagne stuff. And I've heard it isn't any knockout, but I told McDonald, I said, you know, my budget was $58 million when I left. And the esprit de corps that's going to go out of that place, when you got a little outfit in Italy make something, and Wayne Cady, who's the head of Cadillac Studio, it just broke his heart.
Really? Mm. They're going to bring it out?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've said it. It's set, huh?
That's why I didn't go to the proving ground.
Didn't want to see
I'm bitter about all. I don't want to say anything. Hell,
no.
It's another day and age.
Yeah.
But Harley Irwin have stood for it, and I would.
Yeah.
Right. I knew Farina, and I liked him because he could build. He built a couple rotors at McKeegan Design.
Uh huh.
But he did that Rolls Royce, which was a hell of a looking thing.
Uh huh. Chevy was, of course, the big success story. What was behind that, pretty much?
What do you mean, the Chevrolet car?
The car and the design and the acceptance.
Well, the big story of you mean the history of the Chevrolet?
Well, no, the post-war continuum.
Oh, the Impala.
Yeah, right, yeah.
those cars. Yeah. But you know, the big story, I think, on Chevrolet is old man Knudsen worked for Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't get along, and he left and came with Chevrolet.
Right.
Before he got to be president, he was head of Chevrolet.
Right.
And he said he knew he couldn't make a car as cheap as Ford, but he'd make a better one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made Chevrolet.
Right.
It was a better car, better looking. And I think there was only 1 year in between the whole thing they ever caught him.
You're right.
Chevrolet just...
Right.
But the story was make a better car, mm-hmm. not a cheaper one.
And of course, at that time, Sloan and Knudsen were thinking about annual style changes.
Yeah.
Or annual vehicle style changes. And more colors, more pizzazz. And
I'll tell you an interesting thing. You're bound to get that sun one way or the other. Earl's chief engineer, Kaptur, showed him before I came to GM.
How I spell his name?
Kaptur, K-A-P-T-U-R.
Right.
And his son was my chief engineer, Vince.
Yeah.
And he came to Earl and showed him where Pontiac, Buick, and Olds were within decimals of the same body. And that's how the BOP body was born. So then later on, Cole was head of Chevrolet, Pontiac, Bunky Knudsen was head. And the A body, which Chevrolet and Pontiac had, they didn't have the B body. Buick, Old Cadillac. And they'd come out different years. Well, the year that they didn't come out, they'd be old, see? So they got me in the corner and they made a... I did a design where you'd have a new roof and, you know, some pieces, but it would look new. But it was more money than the budget would allow them. And Kaptur, who's the son of the guy that got the BOP deal, he said, you know, I think we can put Chevrolet in the B body. And I'll show you a drawing. And I'll never forget, I looked at it, and I was not in charge then. Earl was down in Haiti. And I didn't know what to do. So I called him on the phone. And he's usually rough as hell, and he says, hello, Bill, how are you? He was half clobbered. He said, I got a little card in my pocket, and I pull it out every now and then to see who the hell I am. I'll never forget that. And that was a Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I called, he says, call Bud Goodman and Charlie Booth, the comptroller, Fisher, and tell them what you think about it. It was a rainy Sunday. And Booth said, my God, you'd save hundreds of million dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I'm modeling it. You and only didn't tell Cole or Knudsen.
Mm-hmm.
Had them come over and look at it. They said, it's it.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the proving ground. It was raining. And Cole and Knudsen had the cars that we had a decision. It was a proving ground board meeting, mm-hmm. engineering policy meeting.
Right.
And the story was that they wanted approval of buildings. So we're sitting in a car, and I'm sitting back with Charlie Chain, and Bud Goodman sitting up with Curtis. And he'd seen it. He said, Bill, tell the boss what you got. Curtis looked back, what do you got, Bill? And I said, well, I can show you how Chevrolet and Pontiac can go right into B-body. Where is it? My studio. Let's go, told the driver. And hell, Knudsen and Kohler stand out in the rain. We left. They could have killed me.
Oh, man.
Oh, Jesus, they were mad at me. But he took one look at it, and that's how they all got on. And right away, Chevrolet and Chrysler and Ford did it.
Uh-huh.
Now, at first, they looked like under twilled, like a crab on a roller skate, because the wheels were inboard.
Mm-hmm.
But then next year, they widened them. And with the way we got the wide track,
out of Pontiac,
that we engineered as a wagon with the idea of putting the wheel out so the window could drop inside the wheel. Wasn't for wide track stability, and they bought the wide track story.
At Ford, as you well know, in the 50s, they were still under the thumb of the engineering, the body engineers.
Yeah.
And I guess Gene Bordenay and maybe George Walker brought them gradually back to a concept of a design center.
Yeah.
Did you have that same problem at
Oh, Earl had that all set.
Yeah, he'd all set.
Oh, that was all set. I had no trouble there. Earl just took it all away. You'd still have negatives. Fisher would come over to look at something.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to build, and I'd say to the chief engineer, how do you like it? Well, You know, I didn't come over here to say I like it. We're gonna build. They never
sure.
entered it. Sour and not invented here.
Uh-huh.
Carla Dean, who is retired,
uh-huh.
and he and I have given talks together, and the head of Rolls Royce and Farina were out to have lunch with me one day, and Knutson was there, and they had just shown their $100,000 Rolls out in Palm Springs or somewhere. And we're having lunch, and the head of Rolls, who used to be with Vauxhall, now he isn't with Rolls, and he said to Estes, how do you let Mitchell get away with what he does?
Mm-hmm.
He just does as he damn pleases. And Estes says, oh, Christ, if you don't, he'll blow his top.
Mm-hmm.
And then Carla Dean said, you know that sign out here over Fisher Body on Van Dyke? Yeah. He says, well, he's going to change that sign to goddamn Fisher Body. But my dad taught me one thing. You got to know how to call a guy a son of a bitch and smile.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had any hate in me.
Good.
I'd have an argument at a dinner that night. The hell.
So you were able to continue the Earl tradition of centralized design decision-making.
When I left, they just moved in on the boys like they tried to move in on me when Earl left. Earl was the golden days, and I got the last of the golden days. Now, these poor bastards is terrible.
You talked to Ray Bickey at all?
I did, but I can't blame him for something. He hasn't got it in him to do it.
Yeah, he's not. The Corvette, of course, is a fabulous success story. Can you give us a little?
Earl, the General LeMay was a good friend of his,
mm-hmm.
and after the war, all the Air Force bases had a hobby of racing and sports car things to keep them busy.
Mm-hmm.
And big companies would give them money to have tool shops and things like that.
Right.
We fixed up a Jeep for LeMay with a Cadillac engine.
Oh.
And he'd drive it on the highway and had fun. So he came to Earl one day and he said, why don't you make the American sports car? They haven't any.
Right.
They were driving Ferraris and Maseratis and Porsches.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Earl came about. When he at the proving ground, he showed Bradley and some of Sloan this car.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, what's that? He said, well, it was fiberglass model.
Yeah.
How could we make it? And they couldn't see how they could spend the tool money.
Right.
He said, we could make it out of fiberglass.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first fiberglass car ever made. And it was shown in the Waldorf. Everybody liked it, and it went.
You had, of course, you had done fiberglass prototype for years, hadn't you?
No, that was just started. To
just beginning, okay.
Yeah, before so then our models were wood models, and they were plaster models.
Plaster models, that's right. So really, Earl pioneered the fiberglass body.
Yep.
There were some misgivings at first.
Yeah, well, anybody had one, and then no dealer wanted to monkey with it. They're not used to that. So you'd have to go to a specialty shop. And even today, the Corvette's looked upon as it isn't one. Now it's very high-tech engine and everything, so.
Aside from the Stingray, which you pioneered, whose original design was Harley's?
No. Well, the original design was his.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then it evoluted, and then we got dual headlights, and that wasn't fitting for a sports car.
Right.
But then I changed the back and changed the front. Then finally we did the whole car.
Uh-huh. Good. Yeah. Is that one of your, you think that's one of the best things to come out of General Motors?
Well, I think from a designer viewpoint,
yeah.
it's what I like, where you do the car and then they buy it.
Right.
You don't committee a car.
Yeah.
The good example, the first Camaro and Firebird, I can't remember what the hell he looked like.
Really?
Because Goodman and Gordon, I said, killed it. Each one said, shorten this, do this.
Ah, yeah.
3G.
Right,
and
yeah.
it was committee car. Well, the new Firebird, the ones that ran up until this one's come out,
yeah.
they ran for 10 years.
Right.
Because I got the right dashed axle, the right cowl height. And it's like good clothes. A woman with a good build is as ageless.
Mm-hmm.
And this baby, they still look good.
Yeah.
Because I won my points. That's where a designer has to have an engineer that's sympathetic.
Uh-huh.
Because you can't tailor something if you can't get them to get the cowl down and get the dashed axle and get things where you want them. That's why at the tech center, in the styling, is where it's all settled.
Mm-hmm.
Right there.
Yeah.
And the wind tunnels at styling. Not an engineer.
Uh-huh.
Because everything dictates what you're good. You can't have a guy like I give talks at Greenbrier on that. years ago, the chassis rolled in and you decorated.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
right.
it was.
Yeah.
You know, that's the frame. What can you do with it?
Right.
This way, you can get in and say, I want that down. I want that. And that was Earl's group.
Uh-huh.
He knew how to, and at the engineering policy committees where we'd settle it.
So you really had to battle the engineers.
Oh, all the time.
All the time.
And in the later years, we got such respect from the engineers because if they had good engineering, they wanted to look good.
Mm-hmm.
The worst we had were sales.
Yeah.
The salespeople, because if something was selling, oh, don't change it. Oh,
right,
goddamn
yeah.
salespeople were the worst. Jesus.
The problem at Ford that today seems to be the product planner. Did you have problems with the product planner?
Yeah, I had a great story. And you know, Peterson was a product planner.
Right, yeah.
And I gave a talk once, and he had to follow me, and he's a friend of mine. I said, well, Mitchell introduced me, all right. I said, you know, in life, if you're not a good engineer, you're not a good designer, you're not good at sales, not good at research, don't feel bad. You can always be a product planner. And in our place, we had guys that couldn't, it's like a nadir. You can always criticize.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, if you could product plan and win, anybody could open a hot dog stand and be a millionaire. But you got to have guts and go out and do it.
The ideal product planner conceives the project and brings it to the design center.
Well, it's good to, I say this, the only thing you can do, you can't have a crystal ball. You can't look ahead. Nobody has that kind of imagination. Dream, you got to dream ahead. The only thing you can do is find out what not to do. Find out what did, what not,
right.
don't make them the same mistake again.
Yeah.
But you can't look ahead. Hell, if you made a car the way the committee wanted it, and then you went over here and made one on your own, they'd say, oh, that's what I really meant.
Mm-hmm.
My whole makeup, it just destroys me to see these committees, oh, and I'd rip them apart.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell are you talking about, you dumb son of a bitch, you don't know anything? You know, like Nader, he couldn't even drive. He didn't have a license.
Mm-hmm.
But
he didn't drive. Well, something you said reminds me that I wanted to ask you about those marvelous dream cars that you and Harley Earl dreamed of
yeah.
in the 50s and 60s.
Oh,
could you
yeah.
tell us something about those?
Oh, we had them coming out of our ears, but
right.
there was a.
Did you have a special studio for that?
No, every studio did their own.
Uh-huh.
He didn't have special studio. In fact, one thing Earl didn't have before I left, he didn't have advanced design.
He didn't? That's interesting.
His advanced design were the Firebirds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you couldn't use them. I mean, they were real exotic, way out. So I started getting advanced design, like which they have today. There's advanced room for Buick, Cadillac, Old, Chevrolet, and Pontiac.
Good.
And the divisions aren't allowed in there.
Because
you want to dream without somebody looking over your back. Then when they got ready, you'd move them up into a room. And that's how the Firebirds are born, that's how the Camaro, that's how the Eldorado, Tornado, Riviera,
mm-hmm.
all of them.
Yeah.
Done that way.
So you pushed that on a division basis rather than...
Because there's two weaknesses. One, you hang on to something too long, like I said in 58, you didn't know what to do but decorate it with chrome.
Right.
Then 59, we got panicked by Chrysler and made crazy fins and wings and things that you're ashamed to look at. So you need advanced studio because you may look at something and then come in a weekend and say, don't like that. And you got to have time. I remember a Cadillac. This was not a show car that we were doing. And that Sunday, it was in the wood, it was in the fiber being finished, the model.
Mm-hmm.
It was all approved.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for a final proof, and I was out driving with my family, and I saw a Cadillac coming at me. I thought, God, that new one we got hasn't got that road back. And I drove them home, came right out to the tech center, went down in the shop praying that I was wrong. I wasn't. I called Cadillac the next day, we're going to rip her apart. They thanked me. You've got to look back.
The tradition seems to have disappeared, hasn't it?
Yeah, McMinn wanted me to talk to a bunch of new students. Like I said, no, I don't want to do that. They're down there working. That's their job. And Irv will be out in a year and a half, and he knows that he's Chuck now is different. He's got a Ferrari. He's a thief. He's a
Chuck
Jordan. And the boy that's out with the school on the coast, Hagen. There's a Haga and Holes and Georgia. There's sort of a three-way run at Rebecca.
Oh, I see.
Chuck should have it for seniority. But there's another bad thing there in that organization. I'm giving you a lot of spilled milk here.
No, I'm just making names.
But Carroll is over all that, and he followed, the guy that was head of Olds. He died of cancer. Young. I did the Tornado with him.
Mm.
And he gave me at a dinner one night, he said, "That Mitchell, I got to give it to him." He said, "We said we couldn't cool it. We wanted to open that front up." And he didn't want, he sent some spies in our wind tunnel. Found we could. We wouldn't have had it today if it hadn't been for that.
Mm-hmm.
But Carroll followed him when he died. And he's a school teacher.
Uh-huh.
And he's now over the tech center.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
Really?
Unimaginative uh-huh. guy. God damn.
Tell us about the impact of the, am I interrupting you?
No.
Tell us about the impact of the tech center had on design.
It was wonderful. You know, we moved out there. It was like moving from Titusville to Park Avenue.
Really?
Everything changed. I mean, guys dressed better. The shop would put a tie on to go to lunch. You know what? And then that campus atmosphere, you've been out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'd look out of my office. It'd be a college campus.
Mm-hmm.
The young girls and guys walking around, the ducks in the water. And all your work got better.
Mm-hmm.
Just the whole place went up like that.
And of course, design was there too as an integral part of it.
Oh, that's right. You see, that came. Earl went to Sloan.
Mm-hmm.
It was really his idea, and said we ought to get the hell. You see, down at the General Motors building,
yeah.
they could come in from Pontiac anywhere. They could walk over. They could.
Right.
They could say, "I'm going to be over," and they'd be there. Mm-hmm. Jesus, they'd be on your back. We'd show the cars up on the roof, I remember.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so Earl wanted that. So then Sloan said, "Well, I think you and Kettering ought to get together."
Mm-hmm.
So it became the two of their responsibility. And then as it went in, Fisher Body was across the railroad track,
right.
of course.
Yeah.
I always wanted to bring the General Motors building out there before it went to New York.
Oh, yeah.
And Gordon did.
Uh-huh.
Of course, Donner was a New Yorker and those other boys. But there's nobody in New York. Now overseas is in Detroit. They brought them not only back from Europe, the main offices, but they're in Detroit.
Right.
And the only time there's a meeting, once a month, is the meeting's in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And you get down there, and otherwise those secretaries are sitting there looking at the wall.
Right.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And we designed it and built it up and styling, we did it.
Yeah. They still have the general headquarters in New York, even though the locus of
Yeah.
activity is
yeah.
in Detroit. What about the foreign
Smith's
division?
Smith's here, though.
Pardon?
He isn't in New York. Smith is here.
Yeah, he's here. Yeah, he's the first one I think we had. What about the foreign affiliations? Did most of the design come out of your shop? For
oh, yeah.
Holden, Vauxhall, and Opel?
I said first, they came to me once and said, "We need somebody to run Opel." And
yeah.
And Rebicki didn't want it, and McKeegan got it.
Right.
So then they said, "We need somebody." Davy Jones ran England,
mm-hmm.
and we got him a top guy. He was English,
mm-hmm.
To follow him when he retired.
Right.
That was Wayne Cherry.
Mm-hmm.
And then Haga, Dave Holes followed McKeegan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted somebody in South America, and I put Lou Steyer down in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
and I put Joe Szymanski in Australia,
mm-hmm.
and I was a new guy following him, and then we'd rotate them. See, it was good.
Yeah, so that worked out very well.
Yeah, it did.
Vauxhall is coming up strong at the moment.
Yeah, they need to, but they've had a lot of tough. And the big troubles is English business, labor.
Yeah.
I was there once. 23 suppliers are striking. You know, strike.
All over
in England, you read that. It's sad.
Yeah.
It's sick. And I remember when Margaret Thatcher spoke. I'd go over there every year to their. It was like an SAE dinner, black tie, and big 250 people there, and they'd talk about their business, but it was a big dinner,
mm-hmm.
and Margaret Thatcher spoke once, and my wife said, "Now, be sure and get up there and at the cocktail party, the speaker's table, get the meter."
Mm-hmm.
And there was no GM guy outranking me, so Henry Ford introduced me to her.
Uh-huh.
And I said, "You know, my wife as anxious to know what you're going to say as much as I am. And we were very proud of you. Well, she got up and lambasted. She said, how can you labor want more money when your company's going broke? You got to get back up. She said what a man couldn't say.
Uh-huh.
So afterwards, I wrote her a letter, and I said, you were terrific, and I want to thank you. And I said, would you send me a copy? She sent me the tape.
Oh,
and
wow.
I had Murphy and all of them go down there and hear it.
Uh-huh.
But London's sick. I mean, England's sick.
Yeah.
Sick country.
Opal's a different kettle of fish.
Well, the Germans, it's funny, the two nations that we were our enemies, Japan and Germany, are gone.
Yeah, right.
But Germany's having a little trouble now, too.
Are they? Uh-huh. Yeah.
But you can see it. A German is a German. And the Japs are like that.
Yeah. What plans did you have for Bob Lutz?
Well, I was going to tell you.
Yeah.
I always liked Lutz a lot. So when he was BMW, and he was wanting to get out of it, he was hard to work with the Germans. Really, the language thing, and although he's Swiss, he can speak anything.
Right, yeah.
So I got a hold of Estes, and one thing about, I like Pete, he's a personal friend of mine, but he's gonna be a guy.
Oh, yeah.
Like at a party leaving, he'll stand in the door and talk all night, you know? he's not a pusher.
Yeah.
And I said, get Lutz, God damn it, he's in New York now. I had Lutz on the phone, and he was gonna talk to him. And Lutz says, I can't talk right now. Somebody's coming in, and I didn't, in his hotel.
Oh.
That turned out to be Peterson.
Uh-huh.
Peterson flew him right here to meet in Henry Ford's office, and that was it.
That was it, yeah. Apparently Henry likes him. He's one of his champions. Yeah.
Now, well, Peterson liked him, because they would always talk.
Yeah, both of them, yeah.
And then he said, from what I read, I haven't talked to Peterson about it since, but it seems that he riled him over. He's a tough guy. He's an Ed Cole type.
Right.
Get off your ass or get out.
Right.
And that's what he said, and some of them got out.
Capilongo.
So here he is building a house out here in Dearborn.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to go back and forth, and he has to stay over there.
Right.
And he's at a social disadvantage. His wife's German.
Ah.
Or Swiss. And she's not an extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
She's not like, I'd say she isn't like Peterson's wife or Red Poling's wife.
Right.
She, I think, my wife does too. She's his second wife. She's not taking him, helping him.
That's a big part of it.
My second wife, she'd go to Europe, go anywhere with him. And it's part of, it's a battle.
Yeah. In the time we have left, Mr. Mitchell, can you give us some of the detailed discourse on the design philosophy of Earl and Mitchell? And how
I think design, I put it this way, in a business cog, it's as equally important as sales, advertising, engineering, finance, or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Should be as strong a message as to what sells a car.
Mm-hmm.
And a car is a silent salesman. Is it, you look at a Cadillac, you don't know who the hell runs Cadillac or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's an image.
Mm-hmm.
And the designer should be given more authority, more, don't have somebody get reports of what sold last year, what people like, or no way. A designer is an artist. I've got some plaques down there in the Roman Empire. Nobody remembers their financial people.
Right.
The Romans and the Greeks.